Good morning. I pray that what I have to share this morning will be a blessing. And, you know, I guess the subject matter really is love, or the love of God, or what God's love is, and how it's played out in our lives and the lives of others. And, you know, the reference to love in Corinthians says this, that love is patient, love is kind, it's not self-seeking, it's not proud, it's not envious, it always perseveres. It always hopes. It keeps no record of wrongs. And love never fails. And I tell you what, God never fails. And so if God never fails, love isn't going to fail. And, you know, love wins out in the end. And what I had read this week, in my reading, where I'm at in my Bible plan, I actually read through Ruth. And, you know, sometimes when you're reading, you know, something kind of jumps off the page, or, you know, it seems to be something you hadn't seen before. And sometimes when you read, it simply reminds you afresh of God's perspective and his love toward us, and also his character. And if nothing else, if you're going through a tough time, you're struggling, and a lot of times just the most simplest thing brought back to your remembrance, and the word just sheds a light around your feet. And it's like almost like you're struggling, you're walking around in darkness. When the Lord shines that light there, it does something for you. It illuminates your dark situation and causes you to get your eyes back on God. And, you know, that's the way the Lord is with his people, and the way he dealt with Israel, he deals with us now. He allows circumstances and things to change that sometimes are adverse, but what they do, it causes us to remember where our help comes from, and causes us afresh to look to God. And, you know, I was reading through the book of Ruth, it's funny the way the book starts out. It says that in the time when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And, you know, God's promise to Israel was always this: if you honor me, you know, I'm gonna bless your crops. You know, I'll protect you. When someone comes in against you, I'll drive them out. And there wasn't any question as to what God was saying. My blessings will follow you if you just look to me. But if you forget me, he warned them, you know, calamity is going to come, and it always did. And in the book of Judges, that book is made up of different ones rising up when Israel had gone astray, and they would lead them back to God, and the calamity there that they were experiencing would subside, and God's blessings would return because they had returned to God. And so when it says in the book of Ruth that there was a famine in the land, and it was during the time of the judges, it was at some point when they weren't honoring God, and so therefore they were experiencing this adversity because they had forgotten God. And so doing, there was a famine, which obviously directly hits the crops, and so their provision is affected. And it starts out by talking about a family. There was a man named Elimelech. He had a wife named Naomi. They had two sons, and so they leave Bethlehem. They're from the town of Bethlehem. They leave there and they go all the way to Moab. And Moab was a part of a country they had passed through when the Israelites came out of Egypt. And Moab wouldn't cooperate with Israel when they came out. And it's a foreign land. And this was not a part of the promised land. But they were returning back to a direction they had come to before. It wasn't a great place, but at least they can get provisions. So they go back. They go back there. It's about somewhere around 60 miles. And you know, they got to go by foot. And it's From what I read, it's like a 7 to 10 day journey. And they get back there, and basically what it does at the first of this book is it talks about what happens in a 10 year period. Elimelech dies, but Naomi is then left with her two sons. And within that 10 year period, her sons get married, but then they die. And at that point, Naomi is left without an overseer or a man who could protect and provide, and she's in a very vulnerable place. She's emotionally devastated. It was enough that her husband died, but now her sons are dead. And so she heard that in Moab that the Lord had provided for his people, provided food for his people. So the Lord's people at this point must have turned back to him, and now the crops were being blessed and the famine was gone. And so she returns. She's going to go back to Bethlehem. And her daughters-in-law are with her, and they turn to go back. And, you know, she stops them and says, you know, you really should turn to your, return to your mother's house, and you return to your gods, their gods. And, you know, I know we're part of a family now by marriage, but look, if I had a husband tonight and had sons, look how long you would have to wait to have a husband again and for you to bear children. See, the bearing the children or bearing sons was very important because they were heirs, and for a lot of different reasons, that was very important. And at this point, it looks hopeless for everybody. So she encouraged them just to go back home. And they said they wept. But Orpah, one of the daughters-in-law, she kissed Naomi, and she returned. But it said that Ruth clung to Naomi. Ruth had a different way of looking at things. And what she said was, she said, "I'm not going to leave you. Where you go, I'll go. Where you live, I'm going to live. Your God will be my God. Your people are going to be my people, and your God will be my God. And where you die, I'll die." And, you know, it's funny that she was a Moabite woman. She was not from a seed you would think that would have faith. But you see that in the Word, how people just show up at different points in the Bible, where in countries or in places where it seemed like no one feared God. And these people had faith. You think about Rahab that helped the spies out. These people, you know what? Faith is a hard thing. And the Lord looks on the heart. And whatever measure, for whatever reason, Ruth had a heart toward God. And that's why she had a heart toward Naomi. And so it says that, you know, when Naomi realized that Ruth wouldn't leave her, she let her tag along. So they make their way all the way back to Bethlehem. And it says that when she walked into the town, the whole town was astir. It said, "Naomi's back." I mean, 10 years is a while, but it's not so long that she would be forgotten. And it said the whole town was astir because Naomi had returned. But she makes the point to tell him, "Why do you call me Naomi? Naomi means pleasant. You should call me Mara, because that means bitterness, because the Lord has dealt bitterly with me." And, you know, there she is. She had a major loss. And anyway, what I'm going to do, though, this is where I'm going to start reading, because, you know, again, the crops have returned. And one of the things that blessed me was this other man that comes into the picture. His name is Boaz. And you see in Boaz godly character. This man, in so many different ways, he just bears it out. It's just things, you know, you wouldn't typically notice unless you really read it. But this man was a humble man. But he was a man of standing. He was a man of wealth. But he had a humble heart, and he had a heart toward God. And incidentally, one of the laws that was in Leviticus when he was talking about harvesting, you know, your grain, the Lord told him, said, "Look, when you harvest your grain, don't harvest it, don't reap it right by the very edge of the field. And when you gather it, don't gather the gleanings. In other words, that which falls out or you miss, leave that for the poor and the foreigner among you." And, you know, that's, you know, you do see the love of God in that, because the Lord is concerned for all people. And he was saying, "Look, I'm going to bless your crop." And he ended the statement by saying this, "For I'm the Lord your God." You are to be a reflection of God. And if I love you and I provided you, you be a help and provide for others. And God's heart is always toward others, you know. And that's a lot of times when we find ourselves being selfish in our heart, we realize, "Lord, I'm not operating in your spirit. I'm operating in my flesh. Lord, give me the grace to be more concerned and compassionate toward others." But, you know, that was a law that he had given them. Well, so when they come back, Ruth asked Naomi, she says, I want to go glean in these fields. And she didn't just go by happenstance and say, "Maybe I might get something." If she's going to an area where a godly man has a crop, there's got to be something she can get out of that crop, because that godly man would be honoring God, and she could get at least some measure of sustenance for her and Naomi. And that's where I'm going to start reading. I'm going to read in chapter 2. Now, there was a wealthy and influential man in Bethlehem named Boaz, who was a relative of Naomi's husband, Elimelech. One day, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go out into the harvest fields to pick up the stalks of grain left behind," she's going to glean, "by anyone who is kind enough to let me do it." A little agriculture here, you know, I think it's important, because we don't live in that time, and also even the way grain is harvested now is completely different than what they did back then. But, you know, even Jesus, when he talked about parables, he talked about situations in work and daily life, and he said, he made a point one time, he said, the fields are white for harvest. They're ready to be harvested. And the first crop that was always harvested, the first of the season, was barley. And when it matures and the grain starts to dry and it's ready for harvest, it almost turns white. And so when you look at a field of barley, it almost looks white. And that's why Jesus said what he said. And anyway, this is the time of that harvest. But what they would do, the men would go ahead, whether it's a crew of women or men, they would take these sickles and they would cut the wheat, in this case the barley stalks, down. The barley stalks would lay over, and the women would come in behind them, and they would put them in bundles, and they would tie the bundles together, and they'd get enough of them together, and they'd stand above what they call sheaves. So it's almost like a little haystack with the grains pointed upward. And so that was a process they would go through. And as they were doing this, invariably they would miss some of the wheat, I mean the seed heads, or some of them might fall out of their arms. That was what was gleaned. And anyway, after the sheaves are stood up, they come in together, those, they take them to a threshing floor, and they crush and separate the seed from the stalk and the chaff, and they winnow it, and they, when it's all said and done, there's a pile of grain left on there on the floor, and then they bag the grain. That was the whole process. But this is happening during this time. And so there again, Ruth heads out there to glean. One day Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go out into the harvest fields to pick up the stalks of grain left behind by anyone who is kind enough to let me do it." Naomi replied, "All right, my daughter, go ahead." So Ruth went out to gather grain behind the harvesters, and as it happened, she found herself working in a field that belonged to Boaz, the relative of her father-in-law Elimelech. While she was there, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. Now look at this. He could, you know, he didn't come in as, "I'm the owner of this field, and I've got a spirit of pride looking down on everybody." This is what he says. "The Lord be with you," he said. He's blessing these people. These people that are harvesting, he comes up to them with kindness, and he says, "Lord, the Lord bless you." And then, "The Lord bless you," the harvesters replied. So there's a relationship there, and you see in character, the character in Boaz, that he is kind. He's got a kindness about him. Anyway, then Boaz asked his foreman, "Who is that young woman over there, and who does she belong to?" The foreman replied, "She is a young woman from Moab who came back with Naomi. She asked me this morning if she could gather grain behind the harvesters. She has been hard at work ever since, except for a few minutes rest in the shelter." And you look at that. As far as Christians, how many times do we feel like we're just almost scavenging? What did Jesus say? "Blessed are the poor in spirit." And she was actually at a place where you can say she is poor. She's needy. But there she is. You know, she's pressing on. She's persevering right in the middle of everything and working, I guess, you know, she's got nobody there with her. She's doing it by herself. She's gleaning. And that says something about her character too. You know, what does the word say? "Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers them out of them all." No matter what our situation is or what we're going through, the Lord has promised us deliverance. And he wants us to persevere when we're being tried. He wants us to remember, look, God is in control and he loves us. Because he loves us, deliverance is coming. And you know, he said to do everything without complaining. A lot of times we complain in our work, but you know what? We need to remember who's in control of everything. And God is a God of blessing. He's a God that restores. He's a God that helps. He's a God that supplies. Anyway, so now Boaz went over and said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, stay right here with us when you gather grain and don't go to any other fields. Stay right behind the young women working in my field. See which part of the field they are harvesting and then follow them. I have warned the young men not to treat you harshly. And when you are thirsty, help yourself to the water they have drawn from the well." Ruth fell at his feet and thanked him warmly. "What have I done to deserve such kindness?" she asked. "I am only a foreigner." "Yes, I know," Boaz replied. "But I also know about everything you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. I have heard how you left your father, your mother, and your own land to live among complete strangers." It almost sounds like she's the seed of Abraham. That's what Abraham did. You see faith at work in this woman's life. Then he makes this statement. "May the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge, reward you fully for what you've done." Ruth replies, I hope I continue to please you, sir. You have comforted me by speaking so kindly to me, even though I am not one of your workers. At mealtime, Boaz called to her and said, come over here and help yourself to some food, and you can dip your bread in some wine vinegar. And so she sat with his harvesters, and Boaz gave her some roasted grain to eat, and she ate all that she wanted and still had some left over. When Ruth went back to work again, Boaz ordered his young men, let her gather grain right among the sheaves without stopping her, and pull out some heads of barley from the bundles and drop them on purpose for her. I tell you what, God has a heart toward us. And there's times we go through trying times, but you know what? It's in that temptation he makes a way of escape, and he is a provider. And God's heart is always, and it's, no matter what we find ourselves in, God's going to help you. He's going to strengthen you. He's going to strengthen me. He's going to strengthen every one of his children. Anyway, so let me see. Okay. So Ruth gathered barley there all day, and when she had beat out the grain that evening, it filled an entire basket. She carried it back into town and showed it to her mother-in-law, and Ruth also gave her the roasted grain that was left over from her meal. Where did you gather all this grain today, Naomi asked, and where did you work? May the Lord bless the one who helped you. Well, so Ruth told her mother-in-law about the man in whose field she had worked, and she said, the man I work with today, his name is Boaz. May the Lord bless him, Naomi told her daughter-in-law. He is showing his kindness to us as well as your deceased husband. That man is one of our closest relatives and one of our family redeemers. And the family redeemer was someone who was close of kin who could come in financially, and because they were in the family, purchase the land of the deceased and also support the people that are left in that family, and a lot of times the women. Anyway, then Ruth said, what's more, Boaz even told me to come back and stay with his harvesters until the entire harvest is completed. Good, Naomi explained. So to do as he said, my daughter, stay with the young women right through the whole harvest, and you might be harassed in the other fields, but you'll be safe with them. So Ruth worked alongside the women of Boaz's field and gathered grain with them until the end of the barley harvest. Then she continued working with them through the wheat harvest in the early summer, and all the while she lived with her mother-in-law. So not only did she go through the barley harvest, she's going through the wheat harvest, and this provision is being made for Ruth and Naomi as well. Anyway, chapter 3. One day, Naomi said to Ruth, my daughter, it's time that I found a permanent home for you. She's doing some husband shopping here, so that you'll be provided for. And she reiterates this thing about the Redeemer again. Boaz is a close relative of ours, and he's been very kind by letting you gather grain with his young women. Tonight he will be winnowing barley at the threshing floor. Do as I tell you. Take a bath, and put on perfume and dress in your nicest clothes. I think anytime you mix perfume with agriculture, something's bound to happen. Anyway, she's kind of got things going on here. She said, then go to the threshing floor, but don't let Boaz see you until he has finished eating and drinking. Be sure to notice where he lies down, and then go and uncover his feet and lie down there. He will tell you what to do. I will do everything you say, Ruth replied. So she went down to the threshing floor that night and followed the instructions of her mother-in-law. After Boaz had finished eating and drinking and was in good spirits, she lay down at the far end of the pile of grain and went to sleep. Then Ruth came quietly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. Around midnight, Boaz suddenly woke up and turned over. He was surprised to find a woman lying at his feet. That would be a surprise. Who are you? He asked. It shows you it was dark. He couldn't really see her, but maybe he smelled the perfume. I don't know. He knew it was a woman. I am your servant Ruth, she replied. Spread the corner of your covering over me, for you are my family redeemer. And, you know, that word, that garment, that covering, if you look it up, it actually means wings or feathers. And it's a very, it's almost reflective of what Boaz had told him in the first place. You know, may the God who you trust, may he cover you with his wings. And now he's in this position. And so she asked him to put the covering over her. Anyway, the Lord bless you, my daughter, Boaz exclaimed. You are showing me even more family loyalty now than you did before, for you have not gone after a younger man, whether rich or poor. Now, don't worry about a thing, my daughter. I will do what is necessary, for everyone in town knows you are a virtuous woman. But while it's true that I am one of your family redeemers, there is another man who is more closely related to you than I am. Stay here tonight, and in the morning I will talk to him. If he is willing to redeem you, very well, and let him marry you. But if he's not willing, then as surely as the Lord lives, I will redeem you myself. Now lie down here until morning. So Ruth lay at Boaz's feet. I mean, what a night that was. You know, those threshing floors usually out under the stars. I don't know if it's cloudy or what, but it's nighttime, and they're laying there all night long. Okay, so Ruth lay at Boaz's feet until the morning, but she got up before it was light enough for people to recognize each other. For Boaz had said, no one must know that a woman was here at the threshing floor. Then Boaz said to her, bring your cloak and spread it out. He measured 6 scoops of barley into the cloak and placed it on her back, and then he returned to the town. When Ruth went back to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, what happened? Ruth told Naomi everything Boaz had done for her, and she added, he gave me 6 scoops of barley and said, don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed. Then Naomi said to her, just be patient, my daughter, until we hear what happens. The man won't rest until he has settled things today. You know, she knew this guy Boaz, he's honoring the Lord, and he's going to do what's right. He's not going to tarry. He's going to take care of business. And so, final chapter here. This is in chapter 4. Boaz went to the town gate and took a seat there. Just then, the family redeemer he had mentioned came by, and so Boaz called out to him, come over here and sit down, friend. I want to talk to you. So they sat down together, and then Boaz called 10 leaders from the town and asked them to be his witnesses. And Boaz said to the family redeemer, you know Naomi, who came back from Moab? She is selling the land that belonged to our relative Elimelech. I thought I should speak to you about it so that you can redeem it if you wish. And if you want the land, then buy it here in the presence of these witnesses. But if you don't, let me know right away, because I am next in line to redeem it after you. The man replied, all right, I'll redeem it. Then Boaz told him, of course, your purchase of the land from Naomi also requires that you marry Ruth, the Moabite widow. That way she can have children, and you will carry on her husband's name and keep the land in the family. Then I can't redeem it, the family redeemer replied, because this might endanger my own estate. You redeem the land. I cannot do it. Now, in those days, it was a custom in Israel for everyone transferring a right of purchase to remove his sandal and hand it to the other party. This publicly validated the transaction. So the other family redeemer drew off his sandal, as he said to Boaz, you can buy the land. So now Boaz has got it. Okay. Then Boaz said to the elders in the crowd standing around, you are witnesses today that I have bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech and his sons, and with the land I have acquired Ruth, the Moabite widow of Mahlon, to be my wife. This way she can have a son to carry on the family name of her deceased husband and to inherit the family property here in this hometown. You are all witnesses today. So Boaz has now gone through this whole process of redeeming. And you know, a lot of times when it talks about redemption in the Bible or redeeming, it's to purchase that which was lost. Sometimes people would even sell themselves into slavery. That's what happened in the book of Hosea, when Hosea's wife was unfaithful and she sold herself into slavery. He went back and bought her back. And you know, you think about it, we were all sold in sin, and but we've been purchased by somebody that's the biggest redeemer there will ever be. And so thankful for that. Anyway, then the elders and all the people standing in the gate replied, we are witnesses. May the Lord make this woman who is coming into your home like Rachel and Leah and from all the nations of Israel descended. May you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. And may the Lord give you descendants by this young woman who will be like those of your ancestors Perez and the son of Tamar and Judah. And anyway, Here we go. So Boaz took Ruth into his home, and she became his wife. And when he had slept with her, the Lord enabled her to become pregnant, and she gave birth to a son. And this is, it gets even better as it goes. Then the woman of the town said to Naomi, "Praise the Lord, who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel." And you know, when that was the thing, because it's getting back now to Naomi. I mean, remember Naomi's the one, she said, she came back, she said, "God has dealt bitterly with me. I left this place full and I came back empty." And you know, kind of in the process of seeing this whole love story take place, you got to forget about Naomi. But you know, she was still emotionally, she was tore up. But look what happens for her. "May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age. For he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better to you than seven sons." Naomi took the baby and cuddled him in her breast, and she cared for him as if it were her own. And the neighbor women said, "Now at last Naomi has a son again." Not like this. "And they named him Obed. He became the father of Jesse and the grandfather of David." You know, that lineage goes all the way to the birth of Christ, and from the line, you know, the Judah, and the same, again, the lineage that David was in. And, you know, it was appropriate, and the Lord had that in mind when this family line went all the way to the birth of Christ. And, you know, what you see played out by the time that, you know, Christ got here, you know, he never got married. You know, he was already committed to a bride, and his bride is the church. And he, not only does he love his bride, he has redeemed his bride. And a lot of times, you know, you see in this passage, in this book, there's a lot of comparisons made, you know, to Boaz and to Christ, and rightfully so, because you see in Boaz the character of God, and you see in the ultimate sense the true character of God played out to Jesus Christ and in sacrificial love. I'm just going to read a few verses before we close here. These are a couple of these from Isaiah. One is Isaiah 43:1. One is Isaiah 54:5. And these are prophecies. And they're personal. They're to each one of us. And the way they're worded is so that the Lord will us, he wants us to know individually how much he loves us. And it says this: "But now, thus says the Lord who created you, O Jacob, and he who formed you, O Israel, fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by your name. You are mine." I tell you what, he's laid claim to us through his death on the cross. And when he paid and he purchased us, he says, "You are mine." And this, of course, this prophecy is in the Old Testament, but it all points to Christ. From Isaiah 54, "For your maker is your husband. The Lord of hosts is his name, and your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. He is called the God of the whole earth." What a husband that is. What a redeemer he is. And I, you know, you get back to it. It's all about love and how much the Lord loves us. And these stories are left for our benefit to cause us to reflect on God's character and his heart toward us. And, you know, I think I'm going to read one other verse. And because this is personal, yeah, you think about, I think about passages where it talks about when we get to heaven. And it talks about, it says, "The Lord himself will wipe the tears from our eyes." You don't know how long it's going to be when you're in heaven before you yourself, I mean, personally, come face to face with Christ. And I really can't imagine that. But, you know, even if you've grieved, I mean, for decades over something, it said that the Lord's personally going to come to you and he's going to wipe the tears from your eyes. I mean, it's going to be you and him. And, his bride is made up of the whole church, redeemed over all the ages. But he personally loves each one of us, and he wants us to know this is a deep love. It's an eternal love. It's not just based on romance, though romance can get in there sometimes. I mean, there's, you know, the Lord is so good to us. He's so wonderful. You know, he loves us. We're his bride. And I'm going to close with this here in Ephesians 3 verses 17 and 19. And this was part of one of Paul's prayers. This was to the Ephesians. It says, "And I pray that you being rooted and established in love may have power together with all the Lord's holy people to grasp how wide and long and high and deep is the love of Christ. And to know this love, that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled to the measure of all the fullness of God. If you want to experience the fullness of God, you experience love. And that's why God draws us to himself, is so we can experience his character and who he is. And, you know, in the end, you know, it says love never fails. In the end, when everything's wiped off, when this world has passed away, after the day of judgment and everything, love will reign, and it's going to be eternal. And we're going to experience that, the depth of his love, like we can't imagine. But I guess this is just for some of my thoughts this week, and I want to share them. I pray that everyone will have a blessed week. Thank God for his love, his mercy, and I'll tell you what, our Redeemer lives. Amen.